You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. On today's show, recapping a big win, 114-91, last night, Saturday evening, over the New Orleans Pelicans, the historic 59th of the Rockets season. I'm joined by Matt Buller, former Rockets player, current TV analyst, and perhaps most conveniently, a member of the former record holder, the 93-94 team, which had 58 wins in the season. So first things first, Matt, welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks, and thanks for reminding me that that my 94 team's franchise record just got beat last night. But, you know, thinking back on the 94 championship team and the chemistry that was on that team and the camaraderie that I feel when I look back on that 94 team, great memories for sure. But being a part of this current 2018 Rockets team, the 59-win Rockets team, you know, I feel like this current team, the chemistry on the team among the players, the coaching staff, the front office, I think the synergy that I'm feeling with this current team feels just as good as that 94 team, if not better.
Yeah, I mean, it's 59-14. There's still 9 games left. That's ridiculous. And, of course, there's lots of individuals we'll touch on throughout the upcoming 20 or 30 minutes or so of this podcast. But as far as – I wanted to lead off with the historical context – because 59 wins, it breaks the prior record of 58, and there's so many individuals. James Harden last night, 27 points, rebounded from an off night against Detroit. Clint Capella, 18, 16, and 6 against Anthony Davis. So many good storylines, but as far as the team nature of this, 59-14, I still can't wrap my mind around it because it's so staggering. But one of the things I like about, you know, you're talking about those 93-94 Rockets, your group, there doesn't seem to be that much of a 72 Dolphins component to it. You know, of course, yourself, Tareem, the guys are around, but it just seems like there's much more of a feeling of, you know, camaraderie, family. It seems like a lot of those 93, 94 guys are genuinely happy for, you know, what this group's doing, including breaking the franchise record now with 59 wins and counting.
Yeah, and I think you've got an accurate feel on that, too. I think, you know, all of us that are still around the team, Clyde and Dream and Mario's still around in Houston, and Vernon Maxwell, we see him. I think we're all excited about this team. I think we're all realizing that it's been so long, it's been 24 years since that first championship, that we're all happy that the Rockets are back in the conversation of, hey, we got a chance to win a championship again this year. And I think all of us as former Rockets players are excited that the current Rockets team is so good and has the chance to hang another banner in Toyota Center.
No doubt. Before we get to the individuals, one thing that really stood out to me last night in terms of just that win, again, 114-91, is the margin. You've had a lot of games lately, the past couple of weeks, in which there have been some extenuating circumstances, you understand why, but the games have been a little closer than I think Rockets fans might be used to, a team that's been such a juggernaut this year. And of course, there's good reasons for it. That road trip, all three were quality playoff teams on the road, New Orleans, Minnesota, Portland. Then you come home, and Detroit, well, they're a better team than you might think anyway, especially getting guys back, and the legs were just not there at all on Thursday coming off that road trip. So there have been some extenuating circumstances, but even so, the margins haven't been there. You've kind of had to squeak by a lot of those. You've seen glimpses of the elite Rockets, maybe the first half in Minnesota, the second half, or most of it, in New Orleans, but you haven't really seen them put it together for 48 minutes until last night. And I know the Pelicans were a little tired themselves. They had the 3 games in a row because of the roof leak, that weird thing, earlier in the week. But I would have to imagine that it's a pretty good sign. You know, they're all justifiable reasons for the closer games the last couple of weeks, which kudos to them, they still won. But to see last night at home, you got a couple of nights in your own bed, you're rested, and you're going up against a team that, well, good, they're not as good as you, and they're a little tired, and you want to see the Rockets go out and, you know, dominate a game from start to finish, and by and large, they're able to do that. So yeah. I would think it helps their confidence.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, we're talking about historically great numbers here with this Rockets team, and we're talking about the Rockets have won 15 straight home wins. That's the second longest winning streak of home wins in franchise history. They've got 13 games this year where they've beaten their opponent by 20 points or more. 13 20-point wins, which is one shy of the Houston Rockets franchise record. They've won 25 of the last 26 games, 29 of the last 31. I mean, it's just an unbelievable stretch of winning games for this Rockets team. And so now, when we're talking about these last games of the season, and we're talking about being able to come off the road and win or beat the New Orleans Pelicans, what we're talking about now is we're talking about the Rockets fine-tuning what they do so that they'll be ready for the playoffs, so they'll be ready for a championship run. Now, one of the lessons that I think this Rockets team still needs to learn is when they get up by 20, keep the pedal to the floor.
Because you did have that stretch in the third quarter where they got it down to, 12, 13, I think, a couple of times. But then ultimately, as opposed to what happened on the road trip, at least this time they're able to build it back up again.
Yeah, and so, you know, a couple things to talk about is one thing is the variance of being a three-point shooting team. You know, if the Rockets shoot about 36, 37% from the three-point line, and they take half of their shots from three. So that means you're going to have a bunch of possessions where you're missing shots and you're not getting any points. And so there is that variance where if you go through a cold stretch, the other team's going to be able to get back in the game. And so that's one area where the Rockets' defense is very important, to be able to make stops after misses. But the other part of it is, this Rockets team, I think when they get a 20-point lead and they get them so easily, they start to look a little bored, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's really the last lesson that the 94 championship team had to win. And Rudy Tomjanovich put it as human nature. It's human nature when you get a huge lead on another team to let off the gas and just kind of start coasting. And you have to be able to battle human nature. You got to be able to get past that natural feeling. And when you get a 20-point lead, make it a 30-point lead. Make it a 40-point lead. And just hammer those teams and put them away.
Yeah. And some of it, like you said, outside of their control. Sometimes the threes aren't going to fall. Also, last night, I think they only had like 8 free throw attempts. It was a staggeringly low number. So I'm sure, you know, you asked some of them, they thought maybe they should have gotten some more whistles. But aside from that stuff, it's just, you got to control what you can control. And I think what you see from them sometimes, it's on the defensive glass. I mean, they're focused, they can be a really good defensive rebounding team, and then it just seems like there are stretches where for whatever reason, you know, they take the foot off the gas a little bit, and I think that's what you're referring to. And so it's a matter of, if you do that for 48 minutes, then you could have won that game last night by 35 or 40.
Right, exactly. And so just talking about the defensive rebounding, Clint Capella is having an unbelievable season on the glass this year. Defensive rebounding, he's one of the top players in the league, and the Rockets are terrific as a defensive rebounding team, number 3 in the league for defensive rebound percentage. Yep. So that's a big part of finishing off your defensive possessions by getting the defensive rebound. And Clint's done a terrific job with that. But he's not on the floor for the full 48 minutes. And so Mike D'Antoni, now in this last stretch of games, has been throwing out different lineups, different mixes of guys, trying to get a feel for which combinations are the best, which combinations, as far as the numbers go, show that this combination really works well in this situation, or that combination works well in this situation. And Mike's still working on those lineups, still tinkering, trying to get all that figured out. And the problem is when Clint Capella's sitting on the bench, which lineup does Mike have that can continue to defensive rebound at that kind of a rate? And some of the smaller lineups that Mike D'Antoni's put out there, in fact, there's one small lineup that just it has a plus 41 net rating.
Yep.
And that's James Harden, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, and Luke Bamute.
Yep.
Those five guys, a plus 41 points per 100 possessions is off the charts. And so that's kind of like the death lineup that Golden State has. And that's kind of, so the Rockets now have a lineup where they've got all five guys that can switch on defense. All five guys can shoot threes. You got a couple really good playmakers in Eric Gordon and James Harden. And so that's a lineup that if they can defensive rebound well enough, that's a lineup that Mike can use in the playoffs to put teams away.
Good point. We're going to pause very briefly for our sponsors and then be right back with Matt Bullard, Rockets lead TV analyst. You'll hear him on the calls on AT&T Sportsnet all week. So Matt, jumping back in, one of the names you mentioned in the rebounding segment was Clint Capella. Last night, just a monster game for him, 18, 16, and 6, I believe.
And 3 steals.
Yeah, oh geez, and he didn't even play 30 minutes. You heard Mike D'Antoni say after the game that he thinks he's worthy of all NBA consideration, which he may should be, because it's hard to see that many centers, especially, you look at the past 2 weeks, look at who he's doing this against. You know, you might have seen some statistical drop from February to March in Clint, but when they have needed him most, when they, this past couple of weeks, you've had to go up against DeAndre Jordan, and go up against Anthony Davis twice, against Karl Anthony Towns, and that's when he's given you his biggest gains. And even though Anthony had 25 last night, it felt like Clint controlled that matchup based on what he was doing around the bucket, the defensive impact. So to me, I'm not saying he's going to get it, but I think Mike is justified in saying he deserves all NBA consideration. As far as centers in the league, it's tough to point to that many that are more impactful than Clint Capella, especially on a per-minute basis.
Yeah, so let's talk about those numbers again. 18 points, 16 rebounds, 6 blocks, and 3 steals in 28 minutes. Now, according to Elias Sports Stats, no player has ever done that in 28 minutes in the history of the NBA. So that's one thing. But the other thing is those numbers, even regardless of the minutes played, the 18, 16, 6 blocks and 3 steals hasn't been done by a previous Houston Rockets player since Akeem Olajuwon did it in 1993.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about Akeem Olajuwon type numbers. We're talking about 6 blocks. We're talking about 3 steals. We're talking about Akeem Olajuwon, who was Defensive Player of the Year, one of the best defensive players to ever play this game, and a guy who was able to lead the NBA in both block shots and steals in the same year. Mm-hmm. Now we're talking about that same type of impact from Clint Capella. And Clint does it a little bit differently than Dream. Dream was a great shot blocker and super quick, and Clint is a great shot blocker and super quick too, but the way the Rockets play defense now with switching all everything they do, Clint is an excellent defender when he's guarding guards. And so when you switch Clint Capella, a 7-footer, onto a point guard, and that point guard can't get by him, then your offense is shot.
What I thought was a really encouraging sign of trust for Mike D'Antoni and Clint, think back to that Portland game. I would say it was one of Clint's worst of the season, and that's all relative. He still had a positive impact, but you know, Nurkic outplayed him that night. And yet, even I think Clint just had like 5 and 6. It was a very pedestrian stat line. But for the closing kick, 4 minutes left, Mike still put him back in. Mm-hmm. I thought that was quite a showing of good faith. But beyond that, I think recognizing what you were saying, his defense, how he can switch. Because Portland was the epitome of a team. You know, they were looking to, whether it be Ryan Anderson, Joe Johnson, anyone they could target and get in a one-on-one matchup that might be slightly slow side to side, they would exploit it. And so I thought, you know, going down the stretch of that Portland game, I wondered, I was like, is this going to be one where the Rockets try and close it out, either tuck wagon, some kind of, you know, spacing small lineup? And even Clint not playing that well, 4 minutes left, Mike D'Antoni still put him out there. And that, to me, is something that a year ago does not happen. And I think it reflects what you're saying, that step forward that Clint's made defensively. And not just inside, but how he guards the perimeter guys as well.
Yeah, no question. So we should be talking about Clint Capella in the conversation for most improved player in the NBA. He certainly has improved tremendously over the 4 years that we've seen him in a Rockets uniform. But from last year to this year, another great step forward for Clint Capella. So I think he should be in the conversation for most improved. I guess you could say Victor Oladipo in Indiana is also another guy that should be in that conversation. Both guys having great years. But the other thing is, remember Mike D'Antoni was Coach of the Year in the NBA last year. He should be in the conversation again this year for Coach of the Year because of the way he's been able to handle a very deep roster. And the roster's gotten deeper since the addition of Joe Johnson. And so Mike D'Antoni now has a bunch of different guys, more guys than he really has time to play. But he's been doing a really good job of getting guys in, keeping them sharp, keeping them in rhythm. Gerald Green's a guy I'm thinking of right now. Yeah. And I think who most Rockets fans would agree needs to play more. You know, but Mike has done a really good job of keeping Gerald sharp, keeping him in rhythm, keeping him happy. And yet having all these other guys being able to play roles as well. So Mike, I think, deserves a lot of credit for the coaching job he's done this year.
Yep, I would agree. Looking at the center depth chart, I want to ask you about Ryan Anderson, who's come back. It was the first Pelicans game Saturday a week ago. Now, he's not going to play tonight against Atlanta. Folks are recording this Sunday afternoon before the game. Ryan has the second night of back-to-back. He's not going to play. The interesting thing is that behind Clint, Nene has not played a game since Ryan Anderson's return. And it's not that he's injured. It's been that Ryan Anderson has taken those minutes. So I'm just curious your opinion. You know, we're all kind of guessing. We'll see what Mike D'Antoni does come playoff time. Is it that Ryan is ahead of Nene in terms of the trust factor where Mike D'Antoni sees his roster? Or is it more a matter of Ryan hasn't played a couple of weeks, so they want him to get those reps? And then when it comes to, you know, is Nene your backup center? Is it Ryan Anderson? it's just situational, comes down to matchups, because I could see it being both. I could see, you know, I see the value of a spacer as your backup five, but I think also there could also be an extent of Ryan just does not play basketball coming off that hip flexor, and they just need to get him the reps to get back into form.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is all of it is true, that that Ryan did need to get back on the floor and get back into game action and get back into game shape, and it's critical that he is in game shape and that his jumper is going well for him, because whether he plays four or five, the spacing that he brings the Rockets' offense is critical. Ryan is a guy who's got great gravity, where if you're guarding Ryan Anderson, you got to stay on him, because if you give him a foot, he's going to be able to get his shot off. And that's one thing that I wish Ryan would do more, is shoot more contested shots, because he can make them. And so his spacing, what he brings to the Rockets' offense is very important. But also I think Nene's, what he brings to the Rockets is also very important. Now, Nene and Ryan Anderson are totally different players.
Right.
And Nene brings that man-sized toughness, where if you got a big center and you need somebody to go in there and play physical basketball, well, Nene might be one of the most physical players in the NBA. So you got to have both guys sharp, in rhythm, playing their best basketball so that you can call their number in certain situations.
Yeah, and I would guess, and you can speak to this more than I can, since you know, you were obviously a high-volume shooter at the NBA level. Nene?
Relatively.
Okay, I would say high accuracy. Your volume, you know, you certainly did not have the freedom that these guys have today.
If I could turn the clock back, my volume would be much higher.
That's just an high accuracy. But, you know, I feel like with Ryan, because his game is so perimeter-based, you may need more reps for him than you do Nene. Whereas Nene, 35 years old, back to the basket, you know, you cannot play him for three or four games, and then he's going to play tonight against Atlanta, and his game is slightly less rhythm-based than a guy like Ryan. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah,
just as a style of play?
That's a real good point that you're bringing. Like, if you're a power player, your power play doesn't really go up and down from game to game or week to week. But as a shooter, I'm here to tell you, your shot is going to feel good for 2 weeks, and then it's going to feel not good for 2 weeks. And that rhythm kind of comes and goes throughout a season for a shooter, especially a three-point shooter. And you got to really try to keep that rhythm going, but it's a hard job to be a shooter and not play.
Yeah, absolutely. Another guy on that front we can mention is Gerald Green. It's interesting, he is not – now, Saturday was a step in the right direction, but – God, the Detroit game on Thursday had so many open looks, felt like he couldn't throw it in the ocean. And yet, even though his shot has not been there the last couple of weeks, talking about the depth guys now transitioning from Nene and Ryan to the rest of the bench, it's interesting to me that Gerald, even though his shot has not been as good lately, he started making more of an impact defensively. The San Antonio game, second night of back-to-back, he had the 9 rebounds. Second half in Portland, his energy was big in that one. I think the Detroit game, he was like a plus 15, even though he was 1 of 9, which speaks to his energy. And I guess maybe, you know, you can also say, you know, Gerald's been playing better, and so has Joe Johnson. The last two games on the radar, Joe has seen his shot get better. So maybe it's a competition between those two guys, because I'm sure, you know, they're both playing now, because you have Chris Paul, Lupa, Mute, you're kind of into your rest program now with some of your regulars. They can each play, but it almost feels like that the competition, that they're bringing the best out of one another, because both of those guys, Gerald defensively, Joe as far as his shooting, the things they weren't doing well a month ago, it feels like both of those guys are getting going on this homestand.
Yeah, and that competition on the roster that you're talking about is a characteristic of great teams. You know, when you've got a great team with a deep roster, you're going to have competition on the roster for playing time, and that makes everybody better. You know, I think back when I was playing and we would have practice, and I'd be going against Clyde in practice, and Clyde had played a whole bunch of minutes the night before, and he was tired, but we needed to have a good practice, and I would go out there and try to kill Clyde. You know, I'd try to go out there and light his ass up, and Rudy would always tell me, appreciate your effort in practice today, trying to get Clyde to practice hard.
Yep.
And that's the competition on the roster that makes your team better. If you're a championship caliber team, just those little individual competitions keep everybody sharp. And what you're talking about with Joe Johnson over the last two games, he's averaging 10 points, shooting 47% from the field. You know, his Mike D'Antoni staying with him and giving him minutes, even though he didn't look sharp, has gotten him into a rhythm where he's in better shape and he looks better now. So Mike's done a good job with that. But I also think what you're saying with Gerald Green realizing that, hey, look, you can put Gerald Green out there and get 12 quick points if you needed it. You know, that's something that Joe's keeping in the back of his mind, where he's got to get better, otherwise Gerald's going to take those minutes. And the cool thing about Gerald Green is, he's come to this team with a great attitude.
Yep.
You know, a lot of guys could get really salty about, hey, I came in and I was lighting it up and now I'm not playing.
Yeah.
But Gerald, I think, has realized, he's sitting on the bench watching what the guys are doing, and he's realized, I can make an impact on this team defensively too. And so he's done a really good job of being a good veteran and watching the game and figuring out where he can make impacts when he gets on the floor.
Yep, I was struck by something Gerald told me the other night before the Detroit game, asking him about his role, because knowing that you're in the kind of this rest program now, that he's going to get more playing time, I asked him, are you excited about that? He said, well, yeah, it's always good to play, but it's even better to win. And no matter who's playing, if we win the games, that's all that ultimately matters. And the other thing that struck me, talking to Mike D'Antoni about those two guys, you know, I asked him, has Gerald's defense, which he admitted has been better, I said, does that give you any more to think about in terms of how you use those guys? And he said, no. And I think the reason he said that is because, you know, right now they're both playing because you have these rest situations, so you need to fill the minutes. But it feels like he already has a good sense for exactly what roles in the playoffs each of those guys is going to play. And at this point, yeah, they're looking to play to fill minutes, but it goes back to the same thing as Ryan versus Ine. He has a good sense of what all these guys are going to do, and then depending on what you draw in the playoffs, that's going to determine who plays.
And the attitude that you brought up with Gerald Green of saying all that matters is that we win, that's the attitude that the entire roster has.
Yep.
You know, and that's really where the chemistry part of this roster really stands out to me, that all of these guys get along. There's no separate groups on this team. Everybody is part of one group. Everybody wants the best for everybody else. Everybody wants to win.
Yep.
And everybody holds each other accountable for making sure you're putting out the effort that it takes to win. And so I think, you know, even though Gerald Green might be 9, 10, 11 on the depth chart, he's got the same attitude that Chris Paul and James Harden have, where, hey, we don't care who scores, we just want to win.
Absolutely. We're going to go to one final break here and then have one final segment, a couple more questions for Matt Bullard right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball. So Matt, last segment here, discussing the rest, because we've alluded to it several times throughout this program. A couple of themes that I want to get at. What's interesting is that the Rockets are beginning this, and the last couple of days it's been Chris Paul with the tender left hamstring, Luke Bamute with the sore knee. You could presumably have even more absences throughout this homestand, especially some of your veterans. We haven't heard any names yet, but Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker. Oh, Ryan Anderson's out tonight. That's right. Second night of back-to-back. Might even see James Harden one day. We'll have to wait and see exactly how Mike wants to do that. But what's interesting to me is that the Rockets are able to do this in March because of how big that lead is. I would say almost insurmountable now, that lead for the number one, especially given the Warriors' injuries. And I would feel that that's a unique advantage. And this is another, you know, I like to pick your brain as a former player, because while some teams do this in April, they do it because it's kind of the only opportunity, because it's only in April that you feel secure in your standings, wherever you are, and so you might take, you know, the last two or three games off, you know, kind of vary in there. But I would like to think that if you're a player, you would ideally get to get back in some form of rhythm that last week before the playoffs start. So it almost feels like to me that this is an ideal scenario, because not only do you get to rest, but you get to use late March for your rest, and then that way, once you get to April, that final week before the playoffs, not saying you're going to play those guys 35, 40 minutes, but you can put in all your regulars for, you know, 20, 25 minutes and let them, you know, get into the playoffs on some sort of rhythm.
And let me also just add, and I was talking to Mike D'Antoni about this last night, that he's also very excited about the way he's been able to limit minutes per game.
That too.
So James Harden is playing the fewest minutes per game ever as a starter in the NBA. So his minutes are down this year. Chris Paul has only played fewer minutes one other time in his career than the minutes he's played this season. Trevor Ariza, this is the fewest minutes that he's ever played as a Rocket. And what Mike D'Antoni was talking about to me was, guys want to stay in rhythm. You know, and if you take extended time off, you're going to get out of rhythm. So a better way to keep guys fresh is to play them every single game, but fewer minutes, so that you're still staying in rhythm, but you're not overtaxing your body.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are in terrific shape. They're, you know, some of the best conditioned athletes on the planet. And so your body's used to playing every other night. And so you want to try to keep that rhythm going. But if you can limit the minutes in game, then that means you're not getting to full exhaustion. And it doesn't take longer to recover. So Mike not only has a chance now to rest guys by sitting them out games, but also he's done a terrific job in season all the way to this point of keeping the minutes down.
Yeah, like even in Portland, I think Harden only played like 32 minutes. Incredibly diligent, even given the environment. And, you know, it felt like a heavyweight fight, and fortunately they did end up winning. But even in that, I thought, you know, he waited very patiently until 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter to put James back in. So yeah, that's a very good point. The other angle with Russ that I want to explore, and that might be underrated, is just how much, you know, people ask, well, how much does it really mean unless you have an injury? Well, no, getting fresh going into the playoffs can make a huge difference. I think, you know, James Harden did a lot of headlines last night, 27 points, 11 of 24 shooting, nice bounce back from, you know, it seemed like he and the whole team almost had no legs against Detroit. But under the radar, the guy that was really huge last night was Eric Gordon. Of course, now he's starting with Chris Paul out. But I looked this up, Matt. His stats since the end of February, when he came back, because you got to remember, before the All-Star break, he had a couple of injuries to his back and I think his knee, just minor bumps, but, you know, he missed some games, maybe just to kind of cumulative fatigue impact, and then he had the food poisoning coming off. So basically had 2 weeks off. Since then, Matt, he's shooting 46% from the field and almost 45% from three. That's over his last 13 games, basically a month of basketball. And I would argue that that's what rest has done for him. You're seeing a revitalized, a fresh Eric Gordon. And so when folks ask, other than injuries, what does rest really mean? Well, I think this increase in efficiency you're seeing from Eric Gordon after he got that rest over the All-Star break and maybe the food poisoning, I say it's a blessing in disguise. I'm sure he wouldn't say that because that's no fun at all. But, you know, these guys, you're starting with Chris and Luke now, and who knows what happens the rest of the week. I think the hope is not just that the injuries get better, but that if they're fresher players, you just get more efficient players overall, right?
Yep, and I'm going to add some numbers to Eric Gordon. Since the start of March, he's made 41 three-pointers, which is the third most in that stretch. And he's shot 64% from the corner three,
jeez,
which is the fourth best in that stretch. So the numbers back up what you're saying, that he's refreshed, he's revitalized, he's playing some great basketball now. And so just when I look back on my playing career, and an 82-game regular season is a marathon. It is really, it's really taxing. It takes a lot out of your body. And when you're on a good team and you finish your 82-game regular season, well, now the real season starts.
Yep.
The playoffs start. And so how tired you are at the end of a regular season, you got to ramp it up and be even more fresh, more aggressive, more ready in the playoffs, because every single game, every single possession is played at the highest level. And so it's almost like a whole nother season. If you make it all the way to the finals, it is like a whole nother season,
yep,
on top of a regular season you just played. So the better you can manage that through a regular season, and if your guys are fresh mentally and physically when the real season starts, now you're ahead of the game.
No doubt. Last question for you, and it's a non-Rocket. This will be a bit of an oddball, but the news of the NBA, the news of the day in the NBA, I should say, is, of course, the Stephen Curry, at least thanks to the Rockets, grade 2 MCL sprain, will be reevaluated in 3 weeks. Did you ever have an MCL injury when you played?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it a grade 1, grade 2, do you remember?
It was a grade 3.
Oh, wow. So you had a full tear. Basically.
Yeah, and it was back in the day when they put you in a cast.
Oh, wow.
When you had a MCL sprain. So I was in a cast up to my hip for 9 weeks.
Yeah.
And my leg came out of that cast looking like my arm. it was unbelievable. It was just awful, awful. And so, but now everything, you know, the doctors are a lot more,
right.
It's a lot better, the treatment that the guys get now. But the 3 weeks for Steph Curry to be reevaluated, there's no way he's playing in 3 weeks.
Right.
He's going to be out 4 to 6, I think, with a grade 2 sprain. So 3 weeks from now is the start of the first round of playoffs.
Yeah.
5 weeks from now is the start of the second round. 7 weeks from now is the start of the third round of the playoffs.
So you're probably looking at those latter two as well.
Yeah, and when he comes back, he's going to have to be coming back from an injury.
That's what I go back to, is because 2016, he suffered the grade 1 here, the bizarre, and suddenly he slipped on Monta Ellis' sweat
right
on the court. And even in that one, he was never quite the same guy the rest of the playoffs. Still very good, and you can never count him out. I mean, look at, you know, James Harden had a grade 2 hamstring, and it's just phenomenal how quickly he recovered, 2.5 weeks, and was back in peak form. But not only to return to the court, you never wish injury. Steph is a great guy, but it's hard for me not to look at that as a net positive for the Rockets in terms of their odds, just because even when Stephen Curry comes back, that just on paper looks like an injury that it's going to be very hard for him to be close to 100% until next season.
Yeah, and it's hard when you have knee injuries to get your shooting back on track, because your legs are a critical part of your shot. And the other thing about the Steph Curry, when he's on the floor for the Golden State Warriors, their offensive rating is 120 points per 100 possessions. When he's off the floor, their offensive rating is 106. So that's 14 points per 100 possessions worse without Steph Curry on the floor. So that is a huge loss for Golden State.
Yeah, and final point on it, I only played through the high school level, certainly don't have NBA experience like yourself, but whenever I had an injury to one of my legs, I always, at least coming back, there's kind of a trust thing that goes into it. You know, when can you trust that? And you would lean on, maybe it's subconscious, you would lean on your other, your healthy leg a little bit more. What to me makes this even more daunting for Curry, it's the left knee, well, it's the right ankle that he's sprained four times this year and has kind of had those ongoing issues with. So that's what I wonder about his recovery, is that normally, you know, it's his left knee and you say, all right, well, when he comes back, maybe he puts a little more pressure on that right leg. Well, that's going to be all the harder, because it's going to be tough to trust that, because that's the one you've had the ankle issues with. So I would think that having injuries now to both legs, that makes it all the more difficult to see him getting back to 100% really until next season.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. I mean, his ankle is going to feel better now with this rest on his knee, and he's going to be able to get treatment on his ankle. So his ankle is going to feel better when he comes back, but he's not going to feel like Steph Curry until next season. And that's just the fact of injuries.
Yeah, and it goes both ways. Before anybody says, you know, the silliest things, oh, does it take away anything if the Rockets win? No, it's silly. This stuff happens in the NBA. You know, you go back, the Warriors' first title, Beverly and Monta Ellis were out for the Rockets. I think Mike Conley was out for Memphis. Kevin Love was out for the Cavaliers. Injuries are a part of the game. It's just the way it goes.
So. Hey, if James Harden gets an injury here in the last nine games, Rockets' hopes are totally different than they are right now.
Yep, absolutely. And if some other team wins as a result of that, there's no asterisk on that either. You know, that's just the way the game goes. Some years it works out in your favor. Sometimes it doesn't. You could argue the Warriors have had luck in prior years. They don't seem to be having as much this year. You can also argue the Rockets have not had it as much in prior years. Fortunately, knock on wood, they seem to be having it so far this year.
How about the bad luck that the Rockets had when Yao Ming and Tracy McGrady were playing together? The injuries between those two guys, you know, short-circuited the Rockets having a great team then.
And even that Western Conference Finals team, you know, just imagine if they didn't have Jason Terry and Pablo Prigioni as the only options at the point guard spot. You know, two role players, you give them credit, very heady veteran guys, but you'd like to have a Pat Beverly, someone younger, that you could throw around there to chase Stephen Curry.
No doubt.
Anyway, Matt, thanks so much for the time. Folks, you want to follow him on Twitter, the way to do it, he is at Bull50. I am at Ben DuBose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Other ways to subscribe to us, LockedOnRockets.com, Facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, and LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. That's our email address. Get questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better program for you, the diehard Rockets fan. So we'll sign off here. Rockets getting ready to tip off against the Hawks tonight, and we'll be talking, I believe, early tomorrow, recapping that game. Matt, thanks so much again for the time. And we'll be chatting again, like I said, early tomorrow, right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.